It seems to me that one of the really big things here is that all too often within both Christian circles, just conservative circles, we seem to have this idea that if we only had such and such amount of power, such and such amount of influence, we could go out and change the world. And I think we really need to be extremely cautious about how much power and how much influence we actually want. So often it does seem that these issues of kind of the fall from grace tend to associate with individuals who had a very rapid rise to influence or power. Not always. Sometimes it is a more gradual increase. But sin is something that is still part of us on a day-to-day basis. I think about how much I mess up in proportion to how much sin is actually available to me. I think about if you have a bunch of power or influence all of a sudden, the amount of sin and the amount of damage you can do has just been multiplied.
Well, welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast, and specifically, welcome back to Trent. It's been a minute since we've gotten to have you on, and so we wanted to bring you in for this discussion, as I think that we may get into a little bit of some historical perspective on this particular topic, which, you know, it seems like it might be a little bit of a hobby of yours. I'm not sure if that's accurate.
Just a little bit. I mean, definitely still growing, but it's become more and more of a project, especially in recent months.
Awesome. Well, I thought it would be interesting. This was inspired by a conversation that Jonathan and I had in a long road trip that was on our way back from an event that we had recently. And it was talking about leadership. Leadership is something that we're really passionate about here at Unbound, and something that I think is relevant to pretty much everybody. You are either a leader or are being affected by leadership of some variety, directly or indirectly in some way. And there has been a lot of talk about leadership, and especially public leaders, and the fact that a lot of the times public leaders that we hold to a very high esteem have been seeming to let us down in a lot of ways. I mean, the big news scandal that has been dominating the headlines recently has obviously been the Epstein files. So pretty much no matter where you land on the political aisle, there is somebody who is caught up in that, that is kind of in that sphere of influence. And even sadly, the Christian leadership sphere is not immune to that. One of the larger stories that has come out recently, I believe, was Philip Yancey, who we won't go into the full details of that, but is a Christian author beloved by many, who ended up revealing and making a statement that he had been having an affair and ended up stepping away from public ministry because of that. And if you are at all familiar with just the Christian leadership sphere there, that is one of many, many examples that you can find. And so I thought it would be interesting for us to talk a little bit about just why these things just keep seeming to come up again and again and again, even in the world of Christian leadership, where we would think that there would be a much higher moral standard and that we would have more upstanding leaders in the Christian sphere, and some of the common features that we see from that. So, Jonathan, I'll kick it over to you to give us some initial thoughts on that.
Well, I think this might come across as depressing, but I mean, why it happens again and again and again is because we remain sinful people, because Christ hasn't come again. You know, I mean, we're in a fallen world. Sin's a real thing. And perhaps, you know, I find it is tragic and it is regrettable that, you know, Christian leaders are not exempted from that fall. It's worth noting, though, that you don't, I don't know of any place this side of eternity that you get exempted from the impact of sin or from the temptation of sin. And so that may be just a good place to start, that perhaps we have Christian leaders who fall because at some level they thought that they had become exempted from the power of temptation and the power of sin. And so a place to start would be, we don't get that luxury in this world. It is a world of constant struggle in that sense. However, I also think that it's worth noting that there's a root to all these things. And I've been haunted by this for years, David. A lot of my formative memories and years come from some of the great scandals that have taken place over the years, and I've been impacted indirectly, happily not directly, by many of them. And, you know, it's leaving me with this haunting idea of, like, you know, what is it, where does that start? Because I don't feel like anybody gets up one morning and says, you know what, I think I'd like to burn my reputation, everything that I've accomplished, and make my name, you know, a pariah among my brethren, And so that was seems like a good idea. Like, clearly nobody gets up and does that. So somehow this starts early. It starts with a seed somewhere. And so I've been kind of obsessed over the last several years about going, like, you know, what are we planting? Like, where do those seeds start? And how do we not plant them? And I don't know that I have some sort of magic formula for that, unless it's this. I'm convinced that it at least begins with consistently and constantly asking that question with the assumption that you are at risk, which comes with that realization. We live in a sinful world. We don't get an escape from it this side of eternity. Consequently, we need to be vigilant and continually ask, where is the problem? How do I not start? And I think that is at least the first line of defense to kind of, you know, addressing this and being aware of it. And by doing so, acknowledging that, hey, I could be susceptible to this too. Let's not take the first tentative inching steps towards that outcome. And let's, you know, when we do, let's repent quickly and get back on track. I saw Trent taking some notes though, so I think we should better hear what he has to say.
I was just kind of thinking about, it seems to me that one of the really big things here is that all too often within both Christian circles, just conservative circles, we seem to have this idea that if we only had such and such amount of power, such and such amount of influence, we could go out and change the world. And I think we really need to be extremely cautious about how much power and how much influence we actually want. Just speaking from all of the examples that I know, so often it does seem that these issues of kind of the fall from grace tend to associate with individuals who had a very rapid rise to influence or power. Not always. Sometimes it is a more gradual increase. But like you were saying when you started out there, Jonathan, sin is something that is still part of us on a day-to-day basis. I think about how much I mess up in proportion to how much sin is actually available to me. I think about if you have a bunch of power or influence all of a sudden, the amount of sin and the amount of damage you can do has just been multiplied. And unless you have been equipped and kind of immunized towards that sin to some degree through a process of sanctification, a slow growth, then you are just going to be able to do a tremendous amount of damage. And that is going to be the natural consequence. And so I think there is this thing that we need to pay attention to that, yes, you do ultimately want to go out and make an impact in the world in the name of God, but you want to be really careful about the way that you pursue making that impact and making sure that you're not too hasty in doing so. Running headlong is going to be the first thing that leads you to being one of these individuals who has that collapse towards the end.
I think that at root, sin and the kinds of things that bring down leaders. So let's you know, the kinds of things, that sounds intentionally vague. I don't mean to be vague. So let's actually be really direct here. So when we're looking at the kinds of sin that brings down, especially Christian leaders, it's not hard to find categories here. We have sexual sin, which seems to head and shoulders be leading the pack. I haven't done statistical analysis on this, but it certainly catches headlines. And at some level, it seems to cut the deepest because there's so many layers of betrayal that happens in that. So there's sexual sin, and so many layers of victims, I should add as well. There's sexual sin. There's financial sin, you know, somebody stealing money. And then there's some sort of abuse of power type things, you know, where somebody is you know, and that often involves some of the other two. But it can be just as simple as somebody who's bullying others, taking advantage of others, you know, handing out emotional abuse of some kind to other people. Now, I'm not saying that that's the limitations. There's all kinds of ways that man can screw up, man being collectively man and woman collectively here. But, you know, those are the ones that kind of garner the biggest headlines. And those are the ones I think get focused on a lot. And so I think it's worth noting that, you know, we had this earlier podcast that we talked about creation and the importance of creation and how an act of creation is so important because the act of destruction is so easy. And so it's worth noting that all those things are acts of destruction. And what, you know, a marriage of 50 years or 40 years or 20 years can be broken with one act. You know, a financial trust given over many, many years can be broken with one act. You know, and there's, so the destruction can be quickly and instantaneous. And it's worth sort of noting that and paying attention to it. But I also think that it's worth noting that, you know, I don't know that anybody who gets caught in those things was confused initially about the wrongness of that action. You know, it's not like well, I didn't know. I didn't know that, you know, appropriating $250,000 was not a good idea. I didn't know sleeping with this other person who wasn't my spouse is a bad idea. I mean, like that, those, nobody really, like there's a willful ignorance. There's a willful veiling that has to take place. And so I think the thing for me that is interesting is, what is it that you do that allows room for that to creep in? And I think the answer has got to be that we are wired to create, meaning that we are wired to build something good and beautiful. We're made in the image of God. And so that's an inherent thing for us. But those things are hard and they're often multifaceted. And in the middle, in the grind, we can lose sight of the creative power and work that we're doing. And when that happens, despair sort of subtly sets in. And then, you know, our ancient enemy takes something that's good and twists it. And almost all of those things are an act of creation with a twist, with a shortcut, with a, if you had more money, you could do more good. If you slept with that person, you could do something beautiful. I mean, there's a twist in there. And it's somewhere in the middle of that kind of, I've lost sight of the creative work that I'm a part of, the redemptive work that I'm part of. I've lost momentum. I've gotten tired, and I'm looking for that shortcut. And I think that gives us two powerful lessons. One, perhaps to be tighter about seeing the mission that we're a part of, and maybe from a tactical standpoint, making those creative steps smaller so we can sort of see progress. And the second is that it's really necessary to rest. And all of a sudden, Sabbath keeping becomes a big part of not falling into these traps. I think that there's a pretty interesting pattern. Most of the big Christian leaders' names that we see fall like this frequently are associated with some sort of workaholic, being workaholics, you know, like some sort of extreme busyness, extreme pressure. And I think you could probably see a correlation. Those who don't keep the Sabbath are likely to then have a cascading effect from breaking that to breaking other commandments that end up leading to some significant pain.
To kind of pull something from what each of you said, Trent, you mentioned that just, you know, that how much that we sin in proportion to the amount of temptation that there is in front of us. I think that there's something really important to be said there, to use the good old quote from Spider-Man's Uncle Ben, with great power comes great responsibility. And it is true that just when you are at a higher and higher level of leadership, when there is are more and more people who are looking to you for guidance, for resources, when especially like if you are towards the head of a, you know, ministry or company, there are people's livelihoods who are depending on you. And so then that just adds a lot more complexity and stress and opportunities for temptations to come about. And so I think with that, to kind of tie into what Jonathan was talking about, I think along with that, there needs to be a just like ever increasing awareness of, all right, because I know that there are ever increasing temptations that will come about, what are the ways that I can combat that? And I guess the part of me that's wondering this is that I don't think that it's obviously not healthy to just then be paranoid, constantly looking out for, you know, just like some sort of compromise just that's around the next corner at any given point. You need to be able to still focus on that creation that you're called to. But I think that there does need to be some sort of way that you are taking time to rest and to actively like have time to reprioritize what you are actually being called to do. And I think a very key part of that is going to be having people around you to make sure of that. I think that's the other thing that I've noticed, is that it seems like at those very high levels where people are, these leaders are able to get away with a lot, they don't have people to keep them accountable. They don't have people who are in their corner who are telling them, that's probably not a good idea. Having a more extended contact with this other person is probably not going to bring you in a good direction. And, you know, this deal may seem tempting, but is it actually going to keep you on the mission that you are dedicated to? Having people in your corner who are willing to ask those hard questions of you, and then in turn, who you are willing to listen to and not just shut out and say, oh, well, you're being negative and you don't understand the vision and the position that I'm putting, I would think are probably some of the key factors that could really be transformational there.
Yeah, I agree with all that. Absolutely. A couple of things are just running through my brain here, especially since we're talking about this primarily from the perspective of Christian leaders who we have seen come short. I think it is important for us to also acknowledge that this is not a unique Christian problem. And if anything, within the Christian community, we actually are privileged to have a much greater success rate than a failure rate. I mean, as we're preparing to actually start recording, we're talking a little bit about the countless examples of Christian leaders who have carried all the way through to the end. Whereas if you look at more secular leaders and people who have wielded power, the number of people who have not been corrupted in some way or had some serious failure is extremely small. And so it's just a fact. It's classic line, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. And it is the case that that has taken some Christian leaders down, but because of the Christian worldview, you actually do have an ability to persevere through that in a way that others haven't. And something else here, with what you're talking about before, Jonathan, of kind of the slow move into sin and finding ways to justify it and use it as it creeps in as your creative vision starts to lapse. I think that's absolutely true. But I also think we can't overlook just the basic fact, to use a John Stone Street line, that sin makes you stupid. And that justification, it happens, but that's almost always actually after the fact. The sin tends to come in first in some way, whether it's sin that's internalized where you've already decided effectively, I'm going to take this course of action. Now I'm just employing all of my logical faculties to try and give myself a reason to do it. Or it's something that you've actually already acted on and now you're just trying to do damage control. So that definitely happens, and that's something we need to consider more. But I think a lot of this stuff, like you were saying beforehand, David, is you need somebody to just tell you, don't be stupid. And that's something that's invaluable, especially as you do reach power, which I've obviously not held much power before, but I can imagine that being in that position, having somebody who is that wise counselor who is willing to tell you that you're being dumb or you're on the verge of doing something that's really damaging to yourself and to others, is invaluable and is going to have that snapback effect to tell you the stakes of what you're doing. Because in line of sin making you stupid, the first thing that it does is it cuts off your long-term perspective and it points all of your focus on the short term, the thing that's going to bring you the greatest amount of happiness or pleasure, whatever the case is, now. And having somebody else who can reorient you towards that long-term perspective is going to be the thing that keeps you on track, keeps you in line with the vision and what you are trying to accomplish, and keeps you from going off the rails.
Well, as you think about, I guess it makes you stupid. Absolutely. And it's to be noted that, I'm trying to think, you're really correct in that we often sin and then look for ways to justify it. We should not dignify it by saying that it happens by degrees coming in some ways. But if you take those things collectively and say, if you're made to create, a stalling in the creative process creates room for you to make those justifications. So it's worth paying attention to the creative process. But if you go one step further back, first ask the question. If you have to stop and ask the question, am I being stupid? Lots of things you wouldn't do if you asked the question, is this stupid? Right? if you took that seriously, there's lots of, in fact, we're pretty good about like, I don't want to think about this. I don't want to think about this too much. I don't want to think about this too much because I know it's stupid, right? So asking the question, finding a way to, reinvigorate that creative process, making sure we rest so there's a chance to kind of regain perspective. But in that kind of, David brought up a really important point about having relationships. That's essential to all of this. But not just relationships. We are mortal humans who have been given an opportunity, have been given access to an immortal eternity. We get to choose which one we get to, right? And so, but we are not gods. And consequently, by the very nature and definition of who we are made to respond to and respect authority. And so when Trent says power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, it's worth noting that every single person on the planet needs to find a place where they are under authority. And that is like a gravity level sort of reality truth. And so for most of us, that's not hard. We have a boss, we have, whatever. I mean, like there's all kinds of things, the law, all those things. But, as you grow in influence, some of those things become less obvious. And so I just had a conversation over the holidays where I said to a board member, I am under authority and I'm acting in this direction and I'm no longer objective about the results here. Like I cannot make good objective judgments about the kind of thing that I'm working on. So I'm reminding you that you're an authority over me. And if you think differently and you say to do things differently, I will respond, I will answer and I will obey you. But until then, I'm kind of going this level because you know, that's the way I think is best, and I'm not able, but I'm also admitting I'm not objective about the same war, so I need your objectivity, and I'm under your authority. You know, I attend a church, and I sometimes say to the people at my church, you know, part of your job is to tell me if I'm being an idiot, and I need to remember to listen to that. And then even if you look at, you know, we had this kind of remarkable statement by President Trump the other day where he was asking an interview, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but what checks your power, or what's the ultimate check on your power? And he said, I am. My own morals are the only thing that holds me in check. Whether you like Trump or whether you don't like Trump, you got to just say from a spiritual standpoint, that's a colossally dangerous place to be in. Even if you are the president of the United States, which is inarguably the most powerful person in the world, right? It's worth noting that good presidents would still find ways to remind themselves that they are under authority. They're under the authority of the will of the people when it comes to elections. They're under the authority of the Constitution when it comes to day-to-day actions. They're under the authority of by the law. They're under the authority of the judicial branch in some cases. They're under the authority of the legislative branch in some cases when it comes to, you know, aspects of the purse. And good leaders recognize that they're under the authority of God himself. And those things are powerful checks on their human nature. But you have to remind yourself of that constantly. The more distance happens between you and that immediate person who's your boss. And so being able to remind yourself that you're subjected to authority, certainly God himself, but then the worldly authorities that come with that is often a really crucial, essential part and first step to not taking some of those destructive, you know, starting those destructive paths.
We know it's tough to find the right resources for your high schooler. That's where Equip by Unbound comes in. This program for 9th through 11th graders combines Christian worldview training, coaching, and hands-on projects that help students apply what they're learning in real life. By year's end, they'll have stronger skills, clearer direction, and more confidence for what's ahead. Prices are going up soon, so now's the time. Learn more at beunbound.us/equip. Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the common ones that I've heard that's more used in a business sense, but I think can be applied in a lot of other areas is keep people around you who are more capable than you if you're in leadership. Because for one thing, it reminds you that even though you're the person who is in leadership, that there are people who are always going to know more than you, are capable more than you, and are able to make sure that they know practically whether or not the ideas that you're presenting and the direction that you're heading is going to work or not. And, you know, then maybe they are better suited to not be in a leadership position so that they can focus on the practical things. But having people who are genuinely more intelligent and more capable than you in a lot of ways is incredibly helpful, and also just keeps you humble in the fact that you don't feel like you are always the smartest person in the room. Whenever you're in a position where everyone else is just bowing to your capability and your just amazingness, that and just kind of reinforcing that, that's terrible for the human heart. That's a really dangerous place to be. And so making sure you have people who can temper that is really valuable. And on top of that too, Jonathan, I love the point you bring up about just having people whose job it is to tell you that you're stupid. You also just need to make sure that there are people who have enough access to your life to tell you whether or not you're headed in a stupid direction.
That looks dumb, man.
Exactly. And so if, you know, it's really easy to just have somebody looking in from the outside and say, everything looks like it checks out, but it's a whole lot different when you have somebody who you are talking to about the intimate day-to-day details of your life and going, hey, I'm thinking about doing this, or I've been having a lot of conversations with this person. And then that gives them the opportunity to go, that may not be a good idea. And that's a really scary thing and a really vulnerable thing because, yes, it gives people the opportunity to tell you you're doing something dumb. But if you are really serious about the mission that you are being put in the position to carry out, then that's all the more necessary.
I'm going to get a little abstract for a moment, so bear with me.
Okay, we're up.
I can see it in your eyes, Trent. I was just waiting. I'm not going to say this next thing. I'm going to wait and see whatever Trent's going to say. It looks like it's pretty good, so go for it.
So much of kind of the fall from power dynamic is born of sins of pride, where it comes from arrogance. I can do what I want because I have so much power, whatever the case may be. And something that I've been thinking about recently in a few different contexts is the fact that in our current cultural moments, we have a problem where we do not delineate between leadership and the value of an individual. In other words, your value is determined by how much power you wield or how much leadership you actually are responsible for. And that creates a really dangerous dynamic where it not only, it almost gets kind of Nietzschean, where it's like, okay, you have so much power, you have so much right to do this much evil, wherever the case may be. And whether or not we actually think that way consciously, that's something that's kind of just in the air that we breathe culturally. And so we have to be extremely cautious about reminding ourselves that we are in fact stupid and that we do need to be humbled from time to time and recognize the fact that humility is not something that is really learned. It's not something that we build for ourselves. It's something that we realize and come to understand that we all are made in the Imago Dei. We all are broken human beings. And regardless of the position of leadership that you have been placed in, your ultimate value is still the same when it comes to speaking on an internal scale. Now, that's not to say that individuals who are in a leadership position do not have special skill sets or tools that have placed them in that position. That's obviously the case, but it does still mean that you are a fallible individual and you need to be extremely careful about not letting your pride or arrogance overrun that fact.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that source of pride and then, you know, Trent, you're saying something like, you know, have to, you're making an argument for guardrails, right? You're making an argument for some sort of limitations. And I think that there's a condescension to sometimes Christians for this, but it's worth just backing up and noting how powerful guardrails can be. And so now this is at the risk of sounding so no matter how many guardrails you put up, you fight a crafty enemy. And so there's going to be temptation. So I'm not suggesting that it's because there's a temptation to sort of trend towards, you know, building systems and think that the fences will keep out the wolves. Right. I mean, and then the lion jumps it. Right. So, I mean, like so don't be careful in this, but there's just some obvious things here about when I was categorizing sins earlier, I missed probably a big one, which is substance abuse of some kind, addiction of some kind. Right. So let's just posit this, right? I don't suffer from being addicted to drugs. I also can tell you, and this might make me sound naive, if I wanted to be addicted to drugs, I really don't have any idea how to buy them. You know, like I'm not in a situation where I know how to get to. Now, not everybody has that privilege, right? I mean, I understand you might live in a neighborhood where that becomes easy, whatever. But I'm just saying, like, in my current lifestyle and the things that I do, I don't know how to get crack cocaine or heroin or, you know, marijuana or something like that. So you know, to some level, you know, so oh, great, you're not addicted to drugs, good for you. I mean, it's just not really a reality. In the same fashion, and I want to say this carefully, I don't drink alcohol, and I'm not saying that that is something that should be for everybody, but it makes it easier not to get addicted to alcohol because for me, it's just not a factor. Now, again, that's not even so much a self-righteous thing. I just never picked up the habit, and so now it's not a temptation to stretch that particular thing. Doesn't mean it's not a temptation for other things. But let's get, you know, more personal. Like, you know, we have lots of conversations with people addicted to pornography. There are things that you can buy to put on your devices that will block the vast majority of pornography. They're not perfect, right? But it can make it extremely difficult, or it can report your activity to somebody else. You know, when you can't do it, you'll find that you don't do it. and so then you can kind of go on from there, right? I mean, like, what are these big sort of things? So we just talked about, you know, the addiction, substance abuse, those kinds of things. You know, if it's great to have a good relationship and to have good relationships that can keep you from some facets of sexual sin, it also helps if that's not really an option in the first place, right? And there's ways that you can structure your life that becomes more difficult to accomplish, and so you don't think about it. And then I give another one as a leader. I don't really know how I would steal money from Unbound. We deliberately set up the systems so that I don't have a lot of control over the finances in the company, even though I'm the CEO. And so, you know, if I did move money, it would be instantly noticed by multiple people. And so could that happen? I'm sure possibly that there's a way. I mean, nothing is foolproof. I'm just saying that it's not immediately obvious to me how that would be a really easy thing to do. And so consequently, it makes it easy not to build that up as a sin that is particularly tempting. And so those are just practical. Like, I think sometimes we sort of look down our nose or we get this kind of rugged, like, I can resist all things. It's a lot easier to resist stuff. I mean, it's easy for me not to be a drug addict. Yes. and it's not because I'm really good at resisting temptation. It's because I really don't have access to that particular temptation. And so there's a practical piece there that sometimes I think gets lost because we sort of look down on that.
I think that that gives us a really helpful kind of transition to trying to keep this as practical as possible for our listeners, because I think a lot of our listeners probably are in the position of going, well, I'm not really in any sort of leadership position at the moment, so I don't know how relevant this is to me. Well, for one thing, you might not be right now, but you might be in the future. And so, you know, our goal here is to give you just some principles and some ideas that are going to be practical and applicable if you end up in that position in the future. But even if that isn't the case, there's still a very good chance that somebody that you know or you're close to is going to be in that position. And as somebody who is close to someone who is in a leadership position, even if it's not necessarily presidential or leader of a company or ministry, having someone who you can be really just like a helper to and who you can help to keep accountable and help to be that person who keeps them from going insane or helps them to come up with ideas for, you know, making some of these temptations as, you know, just so far out of the realm of possibility as possible. If you can be that person for someone else, then that can be such a tremendous blessing, I think, for someone who can be in that position. And just speaking from hearing stories of some of the other leaders that I've had the opportunity to know, is that the people who are close to them, who keep them grounded, have been just some of the biggest blessings in their lives. So just my personal encouragement to our listeners is that if you have the opportunity to minister to someone who is in a leadership position, just keep these things in mind and be willing to recognize that it may not be glamorous, but being a support to them could potentially be a massive game changer in their personal lives and in whatever organization or ministry they may be a part of. So that's at least the takeaway that I would encourage for our listeners. So I don't know if you guys have any others as we're kind of wrapping up here.
I mean, I think it's worth keeping in mind that when we talk about these things, it's easy for us to think of them as complex, and they are in some ways, but when it comes down to it, avoiding sin is actually a fairly simple proposition in a lot of ways. It's just a really, really, really hard one. In fact, in this, you know, current state, it's an impossible one. And so embracing the fact that it is simple but difficult is, I think, actually a thing that orients us most correctly. And as we've been talking about this, one of my objectives this year has been to memorize the book of James. And a couple of verses have been continuing to recur to me. That is, it's chapter 1, I believe it's starting verse 9. It's, let the lowly brother rejoice in his exaltation and the rich in his humiliation. For like a flower of the grass, he will fade away. For the sun rises and it scorches the grass, the flower falls and its beauty perishes. So also will the rich man fade away in the midst of all of his pursuits. And so there is something that is being said there, that to be in a position that is not necessarily in leadership is not to be in a position that does not make an impact and does not have a calling. And to recognize that, I think, is what, to what you're saying, David, one of the things that opens the door to being able to go out and actually minister to the people who are in that position of leadership and recognize that you have a role to support them. And a way that you can do so is by just calling them to account in certain ways and being there to help them in the midst of their own failures.
I would just summarize with maybe putting some important bookends to this conversation. First of all, we're all sinful people and we will sin. Avoiding sin is an important part of the Christian life. It's certainly, you know, maybe some of the most practical advice that we can think about and give, but you will fail. And so let's not forget that, you know, Christianity is a reality that includes grace. And so, you know, you're going to fall and grace is available. And that makes this even more important, because when you fall, you can seek, you can repent and be absolved of that sin. But then you are called to live without sin. there's no escaping the practical necessity here. But it's also worth noting that all those talking to you on this podcast have fallen and will fall again, and we'll need that grace. And so we want to make sure that we don't put ourselves in any kind of pedestals here, but also remember that reality. The other one is that for all of the depressing news about Christians who have fallen, it's worth noting something that Trent pointed out, is that there are many, many, many Christians who haven't. I don't mean many Christians who haven't sinned. I mean who haven't committed those kinds of ministry-ending, scandalous-type sins. And we before this started, we named, you know, a dozen high-profile ones. But maybe here's a better way to think of this. I know hundreds of pastors, and I've worked with them in, over years and all kinds of different things. I know less than half a dozen who have had these kinds of ministry-ending sins. That doesn't mean that the other hundreds were not perfect, certainly, but it means that they lived and are living faithful, holy lives in the sense of their contribution and their repentance and their humility and in their constant, you know, defense against falling into some of these more public sins that are ministry ending. And that's almost certainly the case for you as well. They just don't get the press. And so it's worth keeping that in mind as a measure of hope. If this is helpful for you, we appreciate you sticking along and listening to all of this. We get the privilege of working with young people who we get to ask questions about and talk about these kinds of things. But more importantly, perhaps we get to work with the young people in a community that creates a community of really rich relationships that allow us to connect with one another and hold one another accountable. And if that's interesting to you, please check out beunbound.us. We did just return from a major road trip, as David mentioned earlier, to Ridgeline. By the time this airs, either it will be or it will be out soon, the wrap-up video from that event. So keep an eye on the YouTube, the Be Unbound YouTube channel for that. It was a phenomenal event with lots of really fun things happening there. And the highlight reel is going to be really cool. Thanks so much for your time. And until next time, be unbound.